On this clearly non-Apple fanboy episode, we'll take a closer look at what Apple's iOS 12 photography announcements might mean for the future of photography with special guest Adrian Stock. This episode is brought to you by discoverthetopfloor.com. Join us in 2019 on a ship to photograph amazing Arctic fjord landscapes and the northern light up in Norway, the Lofoten, or come with us in June 2019 on our Silk Road tour to Kyrgyzstan, a photo tour along the old caravan route, home to snow leopards and lynx, with its amazing landscapes and horse riders. Or join us in October 2019 for a breathtaking fall colors photo tour to Transylvania, the home of Count Dracula. Find out more at discoverthetopfloor.com. This is Tips from the Top Floor, episode 828 for Thursday, June the 21st, 2018. Hey, it's summer solstice.
Tips from the top floor, tips from the top.
Hello and welcome. This is Chris Marquardt. You're listening to Tips from the Top Floor, the longest running photography show on the planet. That's the sound I make when I'm busy, when I have too much stuff going on. In the middle of, not that I don't like it. It's better to be busy than to be bored. That's my motto. But I'm in the middle of preparing for a weekend workshop. We're doing a villa workshop here in the Viewfinder Villa about large format photography, 4x5 photography, and a whole bunch of people will be here with cameras, and we have cameras that we can provide, so, and it's going to be a good mixture of beginners and people who are a bit deeper into the topic, and this is always a very good challenge to teach a diverse group of people, make sure everyone's on board, and find enough time for those who have like very specific questions, but also get everyone on the same page in terms of, the basics of everything, the tilting, the shifting, the bellows, the mechanics, and the even getting the film developed, which is a whole topic on its own. So that is in progress, and preparing a workshop here where we live and where we also hold workshops is always kind of like a bit of a frenzy, because there's some stuff you just have to do, get some shopping done for it, make reservations in different places and tidy up the place a bit. So I'm in the middle of doing that. And that's taking up a lot of time. I've also just released a couple of short videos, little video slideshows, kind of a look back at some of the things I've done in the past. One is about the New York City Tilt Shift workshop that I did in May, and just took together a few photos and made a little slideshow there, which I put on YouTube, short video. I think it's a minute long or something. In case you're interested in it. Also, hey, it's the first day of summer. Well, it's technically, I'm recording this on the second day of summer, on June the 22nd, which is also the beginning of summer. Oddly enough, is also the longest day. So at the moment summer begins, the days start getting shorter. And we're in the middle of that, or at the beginning of that, to be precise. And what I did 2 years ago, I was at north of the Arctic Circle in Lofoten, the Norwegian archipelago that we'll go back to in September this year. There's a photo tour in September. We'll also go in February on a ship around the Lofoten. And it was during the midnight sun. Longest day of the year is the midnight sun, so the sun doesn't set. And I've also put a little video with some impressions of that on YouTube. So I'm going to link to those in the show notes if you want to have a quick look what that's like. All right. Topic for today. Let's talk about the future of photography. It's hard to explain, but there's a bit of an issue in photography, I'd say. Because, I mean, obviously, if you listen to the generally more gear-focused side of the photography discussions, be it magazines or blogs or even podcasts, there are like cameras that are considered subpar, technologies that are considered not up to snuff, and I believe that's because there's kind of a breed of photographers who are a bit in their, say, ivory tower, who don't consider something photography unless it involves a certain size of camera or a minimum size of sensor or a specific kind of lens. And before you bring out the pitchforks, I fully admit I've been guilty of that too many times in the past myself. And when I look at that in more detail, I think it's because I'm just, you know, used to certain sizes of cameras and certain sizes of sensors. And I really know my way around those really well. And anything that tries to challenge that is a bit of a threat, right? Or might be perceived as a bit of a threat. And me being very good at these cameras, that's an investment. And if someone comes along and says, hey, I can do the same with cheaper, better, smaller, whatever equipment, then yeah, that's a bit of a threat. But that doesn't mean new developments with different technologies are bad. And that's why several months ago, Adrian Stock and I have started this new podcast called The Future of Photography. And it's a weekly discussion of new developments in photography without, and that's the most important thing, without any preconceived notions on what photography should be. I think that's pretty much it in a nutshell. We're trying to take off that perspective of real photography and not real photography. And let me tell you, that's such a fresh breeze and such a good exercise to do that kind of regularly. And we speculate on where those new developments will take photography. And there's a fair share of looking at how computation will change things, or, well, how it already has changed things without many of us noticing. And one thing that's clearly different in our new podcast is the angle that we approach things from. So, again, we're very open. We don't rule out any technologies or form factors. And I know that some of you are already listeners of The Future of Photography. Thank you for that. If you're not, it's in your podcast client. Just search for The Future of Photography. It's a weekly show. We're usually within about half an hour, 20 minutes, half an hour. But for those of you who haven't had the time to dip their toes in, or who didn't know about the show, I would like to play an episode of The Future of Photography for you right here, right now. And again, my apologies if you already heard that, but I found it relevant enough to include here. So in this week's episode, Adrian and I discussed the photo-related announcements from Apple, from their developer conference. And now, okay, stop. Before you switch this off now because you are on Android and you think this is not for you, let me just make clear that while I'm an Apple user, this is not an Apple fanboy episode. We do our best to put what Apple announced into context of the overall ecosystem and of where others are, because very clearly Apple is in catch-up mode in some of these features and some of these some of the things they do. So without further ado, let's roll The Future of Photography, episode 33. Hi, Aid, how are you doing?
I'm good, mate. I'm good. How are you?
That's good. It's hard to find time. We're releasing this episode a bit later, but still on the planned days, so I think we're still good.
Yes, I haven't dared check Twitter today to figure out whether we've disappointed a lot of people or not, but hopefully just a few hours late, and then next week we'll be back on track.
Yeah, trying to make this as reliable as possible. So here's the thing. You, when I prepared the episode for today in our shared document, I put a topic in there. That's not the topic we want to talk about today. And then you edit pretty much the same day when iOS 12 was announced. You added a comment at the top of that document saying iOS 12:meh.
Meh. Yeah. And so I'm willing to be challenged.
So I decided to make this episode about iOS 12 just to mess with
just to wind me up. Okay. So let's do it then. Let's do it, because you okay, so this is a challenge then. So I challenge you to prove to me that iOS 12 is interesting to photographers.
Challenge accepted. Right, there
you go. And if you fail my challenge, then we will change the show notes for the whole show back to meh.
Challenge accepted. Now, I mean, let's face it, it's getting harder to wow us with new photography-related features in smartphones, right? They have come a long way in terms of megapixels, in terms of features, software-wise, hardware-wise, better dynamic range, and so on. I will do this episode based on the iOS 12 announcement, which was just a couple weeks ago, maybe a week ago from when we were recording this. Mm-hmm. But I do not want to make this kind of into a fanboy, Apple fanboy kind of thing, because, and you'll see in a moment that it's not going to be, because others have the same stuff, at least some of the same stuff, and have had it longer than Apple had. So to prepare for this, I just briefly looked into the history of what the smartphone cameras how they have developed over the last 10 years. And when the first iPhone came out, and I'm talking, by the way, iPhone, because that's the one I'm most familiar with, right? So 2007, 2 megapixels. How about that?
Yes. Before iPhone, you had to go Sony, didn't you? Sony with a leading brand. I had a lovely little Sony candy bar phone that had probably only a 1 megapixel camera in it, but in its day, it was groundbreaking.
Sony was doing really good. Nokia was doing really good with their cameras. 2009, 3 megapixels with Apple. Samsung at the same time announced like an 8 megapixel phone camera thing. But it was more like a, you know, how the iPhones now have this camera bump where the camera sticks out slightly of the phone. Back then, Samsung did that, but the bump was huge because it was pretty much a pocket camera and a phone fused together. And then the iPhone went to 5 megapixels, and they added like a LED flash and VGA video initially. And it kind of kept evolving. Sometimes it was merely feature catch-up, so the panorama mode was announced in 2012. That's when you can like swipe the phone and it stitches individual photos together into a panorama. Google had that at that time called Photosphere.
Yeah, I remember when that started to come out, because I always used to use an app called Auto Stitch at that time. I'm not sure if you can even get that anymore.
You know, the revolution back then was exactly that Auto Stitch algorithm, because before that, in order to get a panorama out of multiple photos, you had to align them precisely and then go into software and tell the software, on this photo, that pixel is the same as this pixel on that photo. And it was really difficult to do. Let me briefly interrupt this episode for a quick shout out to Udemy, the largest marketplace for online learning. Whether you want to learn something new or just sharpen your skills, Udemy has an extensive library of over 65,000 courses taught by expert instructors. Ever find yourself thinking, I wish I could do that? With Udemy, you can. From web development to digital marketing to Japanese cooking courses to, of course, photography, Udemy has something for everyone. And while other learning companies charge hundreds of dollars per class, Udemy courses start at just $11.99. Plus, each course comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee for risk-free learning. Every day, students around the world choose Udemy to discover new passions, expand their skills, and even change careers. Improve your life through learning. Download the Udemy app to learn anytime, anywhere, or visit www.ude.my/topfloor today. That's www.ude.my/topfloor. And back to our discussion. Nokia 2012. Nokia knocked it out of the park with a PureView of camera, the camera phone.
Was that long ago? Wow.
That was 41 megapixels.
There was a big fuss about the marketing of that as well, wasn't there?
They used something called pixel binning, and they were kind of putting pixels together, so it wasn't actually the resolution with most light conditions. Sony, Samsung in 2013, they took over with like 13 megapixels and 16 megapixels in their phones. And then 2014 with the iPhone 5, they introduced the infamous camera bump.
I skipped that one. I didn't have one of those.
We'll talk about the bump just in a minute. But that bulge or bump has since been on iPhone. So the camera has been sticking out a bit, like a millimeter. And then it's actually, I think, kind of incremental features added, like 60 frames per second video, then 4K video, live photos, then the second lens in the Plus phones with a, like a telephoto lens, and then software features like the portrait mode, which can blur the background from a portrait or other things that are close to the camera. And smaller, bigger apertures. And one unsung feature on the iPhone 8, by the way, is slow sync. Have you heard of that?
Well, I know it in terms of using a proper mirrorless or DSLR.
Which is pretty much the combination of if you use flash and you have a second curtain firing, half the flash firing on the second curtain, and combine that with the longer exposure of the surroundings, you get kind of more evened out brightness in the photo, not this. Yeah, this flashy
and there's
look
the classic. There's a classic shot for this, isn't there? Which is like a bus or a taxi or something in a city at night,
or a person on a party. You know, you have the. So
oh yeah, you can get the ghosting of a person dancing at a party or something like that.
So that's all nice and interesting. The camera bump, by the way, is I think one of the most interesting features. I don't like it, because it's in the way in some way. You can't lay the camera flat on a table, for example, or the phone. But that seems to be a case where Apple has clearly gone away from their design-first paradigm over they have a priority on improving the camera over the design.
Oh, that's an interesting observation.
Because
I hadn't really thought of it in that sense.
Because if you look at, if you ask Johnny Ive, I'm pretty sure he's not happy about the camera bump. He wants flat slabs without any features and buttons and stuff. So this camera bump, I believe, is a necessity, because you could make the camera smaller, but then the quality would suffer. And Apple themselves have said, we are the world's biggest camera manufacturer. And I think... what I heard is there are over 600 people working in Apple's camera division or department. Wow. So they have
and
like
that's probably just the design element of it before you get to manufacturing, isn't it?
Probably. So cameras are really, really important. And I think Apple has recognized that really early, that people want their photos, and making it easier for them to deal with the photos seems to be a priority. Now, others are doing that too. Again, this is not an Apple fanboy episode. If you look at Google Photos, for example, that has like a ton of features. And with iOS 12, Apple has now announced features on the photo side that some are kind of new and haven't been there before, but some are also kind of catch-up features to catch up with what Google Photos is doing. So
it's always good when there's enough competition in the marketplace to make people try harder. I'm all up for that, definitely. So this is the bit. So there's the history. I'm looking through the list of phones there, and I recognize that I have a phone from 2015, actually. But there you go. Maybe there's lots of new hardware that I can get my hands on if I was to buy a new phone.
Yeah, I was the skip type of person. Kind of every other one, every 2 years is fine. There's plenty good. Probably
don't even
need that.
But don't need to anymore, though, really. Well, I've got a fresh battery in my phone, I think, is 2.5 years old. I got a fresh battery in it recently, because and I had that under a warranty, so it was fine. Didn't even pay for it, but it still works really well.
Right. Mm. And now iOS 12, I have an iPhone SE here next to my 8. I have the SE for kind of testing purposes, but that SE is kind of a 6S on the inside. So that's 2 years old now from a hardware point of view. And they're doing interesting stuff with iOS 12 to completely outside the photography to make this thing faster, more responsive. So there won't be much of a need to upgrade the phone unless you want kind of additional features like Face ID and that stuff.
That sounds very not Apple. Normally they want to push you to buy the hardware, don't they? The software is just there.
Well, with iOS 12, they're kind of proving the opposite, because older phones will become faster. I'm positive about this. I noticed this here on the SE when I put the beta on that smaller phone. It's much more zippy.
So you've already tried this stuff then? Okay.
Oh yeah, I'm playing with this. I'm playing with this, not on my main phone, but on the SE. So I don't have like Face ID and fancy touch, force touch kind of thing. But at least some of the features I can test here. And let's go over those announced features. Now, iOS 12 is not supposed to come out for another few months, but they are just have a half an hour before we started recording here, the second beta of iOS 12 made it on my phone, so just updated that. And it's an interesting, there's some interesting stuff happening there, because they had this automatic creation of photo stories for you. I think that has been around for several months. So the phone would analyze photos and look at stuff that has been taken in a close enough proximity time-wise and place-wise to identify that as an event and then put it together into kind of an automatic slideshow thing.
Is that something they call memories previously?
They call memories. They have now, they still have that, but they have now their own, like it's a tab called For You. And the For You now contains an interesting bunch of features and mixes. First of all, yes, they do have these on this day, by a date, or at this event, or your journey to such and such, or here, Nepal and Bhutan from October, November 2017, Manhattan, New York in May 2018. It's automatically labeling those based on the location and the dates. And it does a fairly good job in pulling together not just the photos and short video snippets from that event, but it also seems to be quite good at identifying the interesting looking ones. Okay. So there's a lot of machine learning analysis going on in the background. It groups the photos for you, so it makes this whole keeping those events together easy, because it does it for you. It makes those movies, and you can change those. Like, you can choose the mood. You can change it like from a dreamy or sentimental or chill or happy or whatever kind of thing. It's pretty much, do you know the Quick app, Quick?
Yeah, that's the GoPro one, isn't it?
It used to be its own thing, then GoPro bought it, and that has this kind of feature in it, like taking your video and cutting out the interesting bits and making those into a video for you with music. That's pretty much that feature. So Apple, what's the term?
Okay.
Apple
Sherlocked it. Another nail in the coffin for GoPro, then.
Not necessarily, but it's definitely a feature that is now built into the operating system, and it works really well. I'm impressed by it.
Okay.
Another thing it does now, which is again making heavy use of the machine learning aspects, is the sharing suggestions. So it suggests, if you go into an event, it suggests who to share that with based on who else was there, who is in the photo. So it does face recognition. Mm. Doesn't necessarily tell you that's your father, unless you already told your iPhone that, by the way, this is my father, and then it will start recognizing that person. And you can train it over time by adding more photos, but it does a pretty good job on its own. And then will pretty much allow you to share those photos with the people who were at that event with you.
That's interesting, because when I do things like sharing on iCloud at the moment, it does it based upon the face recognition records in the Photos app, but I don't think it links to my contacts. So it wouldn't know that person who I have given a name to a face is a certain iCloud contact.
And interestingly enough, like with one event where I looked into that, it suggests rather reliably. I have done some training on some faces there, like my family. It knows my family now by face.
Yeah.
But based on that, it suggested the contacts, including their Apple iCloud account, so I can directly share it there. It also had several people in that list that were not at that event, but it thought that they looked similar. But it didn't have those pre-selected, so it added a few people and gave me the option to select them and share. And but this continues because when you share something, by the way, those are now shared in full resolution, so the others will have the same photos. And apparently, and I haven't really tried this because I only have this one phone, apparently the others will then also be prompted to share their photos back to you, and they get to choose which photos to share. But like, share 10 photos, your 10 favorite photos out of that event. There's kind of a pre-selection made already, but you can adjust that.
That's interesting. So what happens in the future when you try to travel across a border, but it's a small country and they've outsourced their border control to Apple? What happens if the photo of the Apple AI has linked to your iCloud account is not of you, or it's of you when you were younger, or you when you had a beard, or something like that?
Oh, you'll probably end up in detention straight away.
So they've linked. So they're processing at the back end, then, aren't they?
Well,
they are taking photos from multiple accounts and processing them
on the phone, though. That's what Apple says. They are not doing this in the cloud. They are doing this on the phone.
Must be illegal to do it in the cloud.
Oh, Google does it in the cloud. Those two things
are not mutually exclusive, though.
That is true. No, of course, these things also have a scary angle. You cannot deny that.
So they're doing it on the phone. So they've made it. Okay, so
and as far as I know, they don't do it on the phone right away, but they, I think, will analyze your stuff overnight when you have the phone plugged into the power, because it's probably a bit power hungry.
Yeah, because a lot of the iCloud sharing is asynchronous anyway, isn't it? So I can see why they might do that. That's interesting stuff, isn't it?
Searching is getting an update because you can now combine terms, as in you search. I mean, so far you could type in cat, mouse, dog, house, building, whatever, and it would already have those recognized for you. So without you tagging them, the AI is, I think there's a couple, I don't know, I think the last thing I heard is 5,000 to 10,000 different things that it can recognize now.
Okay.
So cool. It will give you pictures of cats when you type in cat in the search box. Now you can combine those. You can say,
I don't take pictures of cats. That would be quite a surprise if that worked for me.
Of course. But here's an example. Hiking and mountains. You could now search for several things in that search box, and it will combine the search. And it also highlights while you're typing. So I was looking for pictures taken at museums. And I typed in MUS, and then it already, like when you search on Google, it pre-populates like a search list that others might have searched. And it goes through your stuff and says, oh, by the way, here, let me show you, while you type that word, which things I have that you might be looking for.
Yes. Yeah. That's interesting, isn't it? I did see, and I forget where this was, I did see a couple of weeks ago an article that was called something like "Why You Should Never Bother Keywording Your Images." And I thought, okay, so there's a bit of clickbait in the title, obviously. But the main thrust of it was, in a year or two's time, the AI will be way better at this than you could ever be. So don't worry about it.
I mean, the advantage that iPhones have is that by default, they capture the location in the photo. They have the geodata, so they know where the photo has been taken. With a lot of like DSLRs, you might have a GPS built in, but you have to enable it because it eats up too much battery. So there's still... Apple iPhones and pretty much all other smartphones have more information to work with when they want to categorize things.
Oh, huge amounts more, and a lot more processing power as well.
True. Effect recommendations is another one that I haven't really tested, but it's supposed to come where it will look at photos and recommend how to treat them, so recommend some effects to use. And that's a catch-up feature to Google Photos. Another one, kind of a convenience feature, is photo importing, which when you imported photo in the past, you had to kind of wait for the import to finish until you could do anything else. That goes now in the background, so you can continue working on other stuff while your photos import. It'll see duplicates and helps you avoid to import those if you have like a card that already has a bunch of pictures on it that you already
imported.
That's
interesting, because when you have to pay for cloud backup memory,
that gets expensive.
You know, I do use iCloud for some photos, you know, for sharing them and for backup purposes. But I don't, it's not part of my core workflow. It's right at the very end when I've finished, and I'll take a subset of the images that I like and I'll throw them into iCloud, you know, just as an extra backup, and because I might share them with family or something like that. I don't, so if it could avoid duplicating that, that would be quite handy. So
okay.
I have to pay them less money then.
It will also, by the way, I mean, as more and more photographers want to just take an iPad with them and use that to process their photos, the tools are there now. They would often run into memory constraints on their pads because they're, I don't know, might not be the biggest model, or they have too many photos on there. And that used to be a problem. It still is a problem if you have too many photos, but it will now let you know before the import if they will fit. So it will analyze the space and say, those won't fit. You have to make a sub-selection. Wow.
When we live in a world where RAW files can be 50 megabytes.
Oh, yeah, easily.
that's quite useful, I think.
Yeah, import speed seems to have improved. I haven't tried this, but like you can now plug in a card and it just imports faster than before. Really interesting now for photographers who want to leave their laptops at home is that that out of the box, iOS will now support RAW. Let me again take a quick break, because this episode is also brought to you by Portfolio Box. Portfolio Box is an online website creator for designers, artists, and photographers. They make it incredibly easy to build a professional photography portfolio just with a few taps or clicks. The Portfolio Box team is based in Stockholm, Sweden, and their templates are among the cleanest and most well-designed ones I've ever seen. Their European design philosophy really shines, and they design with creatives on their minds. Of course, they offer you more than just a stunning presentation of your work. You can get a store, a blog, anything you'd expect, of course, including your own personal domain. But you know how they're really different from the other guys? It's their focus on education. Portfolio Box partners with a large number of schools from all around the world, and students get a free pro account, and even alumni get a discount too. That's just amazing. By the way, I did create my own portfolio site on Portfolio Box. You can check it out at portfoliobox.chrismarquardt.com. I'll link that in the show notes so you can have a look for yourself. And it took me maybe 10 minutes to set it up. Just create the gallery pages, drag and drop the photos, and you're done. It's easy. Couldn't be easier. And I really love their clean European design. Now, you won't have to take my word for that. Just try it for yourself for free. And here's the special deal for all podcast listeners. Get 20% off the first year of their pro package. Just go to www.portfoliobox.net/via/topfloor. That's www.portfoliobox.net/via/topfloor to get 20% off your first year pro plan. The link is in the show notes, and I really thank them for the support. On with the show. We'll now support RAW, as in you can now edit your RAW files instead of just the JPEGs that used to be extracted from the RAW file. So
that's pretty cool.
And processing power wise, the devices are definitely there. I think there's still this fight between the space on the device and battery runtime and so on. But being able to import and edit RAW,
does that mean the camera app will now shoot RAW?
I don't know that, but I would assume that that's the case. Yes.
That's interesting, because that is interesting. So then you've got real options there if it could do that, couldn't you? Because, you know, some people would prefer RAW, but some people will prefer the new, you know, the Hike format or something like that, which is the new JPEG format.
The high efficiency codec thing. Yes.
Yeah, that one. Yes, yes. So that could be interesting.
Another improvement they have apparently done in their portrait mode. That's the mode that detects the person and then blurs the background for you. that used to have like a not always that wouldn't always detect exactly like where the hairs were and the edges were, and sometimes would overshoot. From what I've read, people testing this, it has dramatically improved. So yeah, your DSLR with its big sensor is, especially for shallow depth of field, might not be that useful anymore in the future.
I think I'll keep mine if it's all right with you.
but here's my killer feature. Here's the absolute killer feature.
Okay.
How often have you, I assume you use the built-in camera, and I assume that you will swipe to the left on your home screen, on your lock screen, to take a quick photo. That's the way to access the camera. If the phone is locked, you turn it on and then you just swipe left and then you're in the camera and then you can take a quick photo. It's the fastest way to access the camera. And every now and then that is just that it bulks a bit. It takes a second or two or three to think about turning the camera on. And that's like three seconds too long for me, you know?
Yes, absolutely.
If this, come on, you can turn on your camera and you're looking at this black screen, you swiped it over and it just takes too long. That is now instant.
Okay, this is, so that I could like.
This is my killer feature above all of the others. That's the
killer
feature.
This is like when they improved the eject button in the Mac OS, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you remember it used to take about a minute and a half to eject a CD?
Yeah.
And they said, and it took them about 2 years to develop the fast eject. And they said, it was a lot harder than we thought it was going to be.
So the faster, and even on the older iPhone SE, the 3 year old iPhone, two, three year old iPhone SE, that is just swipe instantly on. So that's like, yay, finally.
That's good, yeah.
There's an interesting feature for developers in there. They have like with every WWDC, with every developer conference, Apple announces new APIs, new stuff that programmers can use to make apps. And one they introduce is called the Portrait Segmentation API, which is pretty much, sits on top of the portrait photography feature, the depth recognition feature that we've talked about often here on the show. It's a new API for developers that allows them to separate the photo into layers based on depth. So you could now, based on that API, separate out the background from the foreground and do an app like a virtual green screen kind of thing where you swap out the
background. That's interesting, actually. I've been waiting for something like that.
Oh, it was just a matter of time,
There were a couple of desktop apps that could read the depth map. Depth map, yes, that's right, depth map information. But I don't think I'd seen any phone apps or any iOS apps that were actually could take that depth map information and do anything with it.
Right. Now, I assume that this will only be on cameras that have on phones that have two cameras for that depth information. I don't think it goes, like, it won't probably work on my iPhone 8 with just one camera because it also doesn't support that portrait mode. So that's my assumption. Other than that, stuff that uses the camera, the AR, the augmented reality features have now, or will with iOS 12, have the ability to have shared experiences. So you could have several people using the AR and looking at the same things and playing the same game together.
You're catching Pokemon together. Excellent.
Yeah, that's it's at this point it's mainly on a play and toy kind of level, but I'm pretty sure we will see that seep into other areas as well.
You could do an AR event, couldn't you? You know, like it's a phenomenon I never understood, but the silent disco phenomenon where everybody is in a room and there's lots of lights like a nightclub, but everybody's wearing headphones. I never understood the appeal of that. I guess my days of clubbing were when DJs used to put records on and occasionally CDs, but there you go. You could imagine somebody, which band would do this? Do you know who do this? Muse would do this, right? Are you a Muse fan?
I know of them and I know some of their music.
So Muse, yeah, okay. So Muse, I can. They've done quite a few virtual reality videos, you know, 360 immersion stuff with Google. I can imagine Muse doing a gig of some sort, right, where they weren't actually there. You had to look at it through your phone on AR.
that the whole AR thing is. I mean, let's not go down that rabbit hole. But the whole AR thing will enable stuff like you'll be watching a soccer World Cup game right from the sidelines while not being there. You know, there's stuff in the future, but that's definitely some of the future there.
It's one for the next royal wedding, isn't it?
I totally want to sit in the first row there. Definitely. I want to sit on the Queen's lap.
Hey, that's treason. You watch it? Your language.
Is it?
Probably. I don't know.
Are you a royalist? Totally.
Am I a royalist? I don't think I'm an active royalist, but okay. I take some comfort that there are some people who've been bred for leadership that are running the country.
There's a tiny little royalist in every Brit, I'm sure.
Yes. Unless you're absolutely not. There are some quite strong anti-royalist tendencies.
I know, just teasing.
But okay. All right.
So what does this mean for the future of photography? Not the Queen, but the whole smartphone announcements. And I've just put together a few points here. I think there will be less need to use third-party apps, which for some things at least we're looking
that
at.
I mean, that happens a long time, over time anyway.
That's kind of a given because Apple is known to Sherlock apps. And by the way, if you don't know what Sherlocking means, Google it. So Apple takes apps and replaces them with features built into the operating system that are good enough.
Companies, so Amazon are quite,
they're good at that too. Yeah,
quite good at that sort of thing as well. Yeah,
I think we'll have a lot of interesting use cases and fun use cases, especially when it comes to the portrait segmentation API, virtual green screen stuff. I think has a great potential to be fun, especially with good edge detection.
You could make videos, couldn't you? You could shoot green screen video on your phone and edit it using iMovie and publish it using whatever. And actually, that could be fun. Yeah, that could be fun.
Or you share that to someone else and they will edit it and put you in front of something strange.
It'll be mostly Star Wars stuff, won't it? Let's face it.
Probably. I think we can also expect more photo spam from others with the sharing suggestions. I didn't want your photos,
that sounds terrible.
Well, as long as they keep them grouped together, that's, I think, still a good thing. But
they'll have to introduce a mute function, won't they?
I think they have to over time do that. But here's one story that just the other day came across in another podcast, and it was I was thinking of something like what has been announced. Someone wrote in to this other podcast that his 80-year-old dad loves to share photos with others. He loves to look at photos with others, but he cannot handle the computer that well anymore. Right, he's getting too old for that, and he has a PC, and he has tons of photos, but they're really not well organized. They are in folders, and they're duplicate folders, and three different folders for the same family vacation. Lots of redundancy, and it was heartbreaking to hear how he goes and tries to find those photos right now. He has printouts of the directory structure, of the folder structure, on seven pages. Wow. So he's going through those seven pages trying to find them, and then has to go to the computer to identify them. And he's pretty much, and that's the only way he can do it right now, because he just never put so much time into the organizing side and the tagging side, or maybe he didn't have the tools. But he's losing his joy in looking at photos because it's too tedious for him. And I think that's where stuff like the content recognition, the grouping of events for you, the whole AI part, the better search features, that's one of the use cases where I think this is really going to make a difference. It's not going to be just stuff that we look at and go, haha, that's funny, but I don't need that. But someone like that is definitely going to enjoy photography more this way.
Yeah, okay, yes, I can see that. I still go back to your killer feature, though, which is the faster open the camera.
Because
that'll help people take better photos.
And more.
Well, okay, more photos is not necessarily a good thing. Better photos is a good thing. It's the Cartier-Bresson decisive moment, isn't it? It's like, oh, because I have missed things, unexpected things in the past because it's taken me just too long to get my phone.
That's one of my mottos. Anything that's between me and a photo has to go.
I had a moment like that today, actually. You just triggered a memory. I was on my way. I was on my way to a meeting. Actually, this is in my work life, and I got stopped at a junction, and just sitting there on a post beside me was a magpie eating something. And I thought, oh, right, I get my phone out. And I thought, no, there's no way. I mean, apart from the fact that I was in traffic and I had to, focus on the driving, there was no way I would have been able to get my phone, which was sitting just beside me in the little cubbyhole in my car. There's no way I'd have been able to switch it on in time, get it all done and sorted. And I just thought to myself, I wish if I'd had a little point and shoot camera, I've got an Olympus Tough camera, that would have done it. Or maybe even a slightly bigger camera, I could have picked that up off the passenger seat and got the shot.
So
maybe this will help.
Faster slide to photos will also then mean more traffic accidents, right?
That's just natural selection. So that's fine.
Okay. Adrian, question. Did I manage to make this iOS 12 topic more interesting than you thought it was?
Oh, wow. Okay. So, well, I guess the listener show will do that. So have you done it? Okay. So, yes, I think you did.
Okay.
There is more depth in there than I had appreciated by reading highlights of WWDC. Let's see, what would I pick out? I'm less fussed about more raw support. Actually, I'd be more interested if they were doubling down on the high efficiency codecs and making those work better, keeping more information in them. Less fussed about that. But I'm interested in the back end AI stuff of the sharing suggestions. That looks like that could get quite powerful very quickly. I'll be interested to see them bring in the controls around it as well at the application level. But the API for the depth map information, actually, I think that sounds interesting. That could spawn a whole bunch of new and interesting things. That really for me, I think probably is the most interesting thing from an image making point of view. If we could get some apps that allow us even just on our phones, to play around with that depth map information, that gives you ability to fine tune, wouldn't it? So yeah, maybe it's not meh. Maybe there's a couple of things in there. I'd take advantage of them, I'd have to go and buy a new phone. And what do they cost at the moment? About £1,200 or something.
For me, my two main features, if I had to pick out two, would be clearly the faster slide, the immediate availability of the camera. That definitely takes the crown. But the second one would be the whole background analysis, grouping of photos, sharing aspects of it. So you'd have the background AI. So I think we're on the same page there.
I think we're pretty aligned there, aren't we? Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, proof is in the pudding and all that. But as I say, I think some of it is stuff that I may end up being able to take advantage of later this year if I buy a new phone.
If you don't, you will have some of those features. It's not all depth related, and it doesn't all require two cameras. So, all right. There we go, another episode in the can, and we will be back in a week talking about sensors that time.
Until then, yes.
Take care.
That'll be a good one. All right, cheers. Bye-bye.
Okay, let me cut that outro short for you. Back to the studio. We're back at Tips from the Top Floor. If you want to hear more about the future of photography, you can find it anywhere you find your other podcasts. Again, it's a weekly show. And we talk about way more than just iOS. We've talked about drones, about LUTs, about blockchain-related photo initiatives, about projection mapping, computational photography, machine learning, the whole thing that might influence how we see and do photography in the future. And we'd love to welcome you as a new listener, the future of photography. All right, that was it for this episode of Tips from the Top Floor / the Future of Photography. Thanks again, everyone, for your support. And as always, there are many ways to help me make more episodes of Tips from the Top Floor. Check out tfttf.com/support. And of course, thanks to Portfolio Box and Udemy for helping make this episode possible. Make sure to check out their offers. The links are in the show notes. And as always, don't forget to send in your voicemails. I love your questions and feedbacks. You know how this goes. Record on your smartphone. Send to voice@tfttf.com. That's voice@tfttf.com. And here's another listener tip from Mark Gilvey.
Hey, Chris. This is Mark Gilvey in Woodbridge, Virginia again. Here's another tip for the listeners out there. For those of you who are new to manual and you're shooting at ISO 200 on a sunny day, set it to F8 at 1/1000 of a second and forget about it. If it's sunny the next day, guess what? Shoot it at the same. If you're under a tree but it's still sunny out, shoot it the same. If you're under the cloud but there's still sun around you, shoot it the same. Just experiment with that. And you'll see that your images will be more consistent when you bring them in Lightroom.
Thank you, Mark. And by the way, this could be your spot. If you have a quick photo tip for the TFTTF listeners, send it to voice@tfttf.com. Looking forward to hearing from you. Music for the show by Jeff Smith, sound partner and hence Peter Kagerud, publishing and Slack challenges by Release Pixie, Matt Rassitar, Armset, Slack invitations by Chief Invitation Officer, CIO, Rusty Russ. The link to get to the Slack is in the show notes. My name is Chris Marquardt. You'll find me on social media at Chris, MarquardT. Now go out and take amazing photos, be nice to each other, and happy shooting.